Speaker is Roxanne Karani from the Public Health Seattle and King County, and the title of her presentation will be Gonorrhea Treatment Practices in the STD Surveillance Network in 2010.
Thanks, Kyle. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to move right into the background, and actually, given Mark and Julie's presentations, I'm going to skip most of the first bullets on this slide because I think we've already covered it very well, and move right down to the second to the last bullet, and just note that in 2010, the CDC treatment guidelines were revised to recommend dual therapy with ceftriaxone and azithromycin or doxycycline for gonorrhea treatment. But currently, we have very few data regarding how people are treating gonorrhea in the U.S., and so that was the purpose of this study. The objective of our study was to describe gonorrhea treatment practices in a multi-site study across diverse medical care settings in the United States. And we carried this out through the STD Surveillance Network, or SUN. SUN is a sentinel STD surveillance system which includes a population-based data collection component for gonorrhea cases, in which a common protocol for interviewing gonorrhea cases is used across all of the funded sites. In this, as a part of the protocol, a sample of gonorrhea cases are randomly selected for interview, and we use standardized questions across the SUN sites. This map shows all of the 12 currently funded sites in SUN. You can see that there are 7 states and 5 independent cities. However, because the protocol for the population-based gonorrhea data collection varies in how it's implemented across the sites, there are varying levels of completeness of the data and interview completion rates. So for the purposes of this analysis, we included 6 of the SUN sites that met the following criteria in their 2010 data. These sites all have a response rate for the interviews of greater than 30%. They needed to have at least 100 gonorrhea cases interviewed per year, and less than 30% of their cases missing treatment data. And the 6 sites that we ended up with represent 48 counties in the United States, and they're shown on this map. Our 6 sites included the states of Washington, California, and Colorado, and the independent cities of Baltimore and San Francisco. Our study period was from January 1st, 2010, and included the first 3 quarters of 2011. The data sources were case reports for gonorrhea cases, including both provider and lab-based reports, and interviews which elicited demographic information, gender of sex partners, provider type, and treatment information if it wasn't already included on the case report. For the analysis, all of the cases were weighted to account for the differing sampling fractions across the SUN sites and for non-response using clinic type, age group, and gender. We used SAS Proc Survey Freak to produce weighted frequencies. Because the data are stratified by site, Survey Freak adjusts for the potential correlation of data within the geographic sites. Moving on to the results. During the study period, 63,131 total gonorrhea cases were reported in our 6 SUN sites. Of these, 12.7% were randomly selected for an interview, and of those, 46.7% were actually interviewed. This slide shows the response rates by site, and you can see, I'm not sure that I mentioned it, but when we selected our 6 sites for the analysis, we were using 2010 data because the 2011 data weren't available yet. So you can see from this slide that when we combined 2010 and 2011 data, Alabama's response rate went down to 25%. So we still have quite a lot of variability with the response rates. Our site with the highest response rate for interviews was Baltimore, with 76% of the interviews completed. In the last column of slide, you can see the distribution of cases across sites, and you'll see there that California contributed the greatest proportion of cases to the analysis. The next few slides show the characteristics of the interviewed cases. 56% of the cases interviewed were men. Among men, about a third of them were MSM. 45% were men who have sex with women, and the remainder had unknown gender of sex partners. 61% of the cases were reported in 2010, and 39% in the first 3 quarters of 2011. 25% of the cases were diagnosed in STD clinics, another quarter or so were fell into the unknown or other category for provider type, and the rest of the cases were pretty evenly split between family planning clinics, private providers, and hospital-based clinics or emergency rooms. This slide shows the use of ceftriaxone among cases with complete treatment data. If you look down at the bottom right-hand corner of the slide, you'll note that when we first looked at treatment, 18% of our cases were missing the treatment data. Another 4% were untreated at the time of interview. So for the rest of the results, I've excluded those cases, and we're just looking at the cases that had complete treatment data. You can see on the left-hand panel that 34% of cases were treated with ceftriaxone alone, 45% of them were treated with dual therapy, and the rest were split between other medication regimens. Altogether, 80% of the cases in our sample were treated with ceftriaxone alone or in combination with something else. This slide shows ceftriaxone use, the distribution across the Sun sites. Alabama had the highest use of ceftriaxone with 93% of their cases receiving ceftriaxone, and Colorado the lowest. The next few slides look at the distribution of ceftriaxone treatment by the categories that we looked at before. More men received ceftriaxone than women. Among men, MSM were more likely to be treated with ceftriaxone. When we look at it by provider type, as you might expect, patients in STD clinics were more likely to receive or be treated with ceftriaxone than other patients, followed by those in the other or unknown provider type, hospitals, private providers, and family planning clinics. This slide shows treatment with ceftriaxone broken down by time, corresponding with the release of the 2010 treatment guidelines. We decided to use time going past the release of the treatment guidelines to give providers some time to implement the changes. So the first bar shows cases reported from January 2010 through March 2011, and the second bar shows cases reported in the second two quarters of 2011. And you can see there was an increase from 76% of cases to 90% of cases treated with ceftriaxone across that time period. We also carried out a second analysis limiting sites based on their response rates for the interviews because we were concerned about the low response rates in some of our sites. For that analysis, we only kept the city of Baltimore and the states of California and Washington. And somewhat surprisingly, perhaps not so, the analysis yielded very similar results. We saw all of the same things associated with ceftriaxone treatment, and again, 80% of the patients that we looked at in those three sites were treated with ceftriaxone for their gonorrhea. In summary, most of the patients in our data set were treated with ceftriaxone. The use of ceftriaxone varied by site, geographic site that is, gender of sex partners, and provider type. And it appears to have increased after the 2010 treatment guidelines were introduced. There are some limitations to our study. The first is that we used a relatively small number of geographic sites, which were included in Sun. There was a low response rate in some of our sites, and there was some instability in our sentinel surveillance data in that you saw that response rates changed in some sites from 2010 to 2011, I think dependent on budget cuts and things that were going on at the local health departments from 2010 to 2011. Finally, there was a sizable proportion of the cases who were missing treatment data. In conclusion, again, most patients with gonorrhea currently receive ceftriaxone. A smaller proportion are treated with dual therapy. Ceftriaxone use is higher among men, MSM, and in STD clinic populations. And finally, we believe that continued surveillance of treatment practices for gonorrhea is important given the changing antibiotic susceptibility patterns that we've been talking about and limited alternative treatment options for gonorrhea. I'd like to acknowledge my co-investigators, especially Mark Stenger at the CDC, who calculated all of the weights for this analysis, and thank you for your attention.
Questions? Such a quiet group. Is it too early? Yeah.
Hi, Julie Schillinger from New York. Can you hear me?
Hi, Julie.
Thanks, Roxanne. That was really interesting. I think you showed in the beginning a slide that explained how you started with 66,000 GC mm-hmm. cases and ended up with a sample for which you have the data. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on the bias that may exist for the small proportion that you actually have treatment information for. I mean, in New York City, there is a dual reporting requirement. Gonorrhea should be reported by clinical labs and by providers, but we get case reports from providers with treatment information for only a small fraction. About 29% of our gonorrhea cases have a provider report. Right. And when we look at the treatment offered on those provider reports, it looks good for ceftriaxone. It looks like about 86% actually got cephalosporin treatment. Most of that was ceftriaxone. But we worry that the remaining, 70% that don't have provider reports are being treated, in less in compliance with treatment guidelines. I wonder what you thought.
I think working with the Sun data has proven to be a very interesting experience, as Kyle can probably attest to. That's the word that I'm looking for, because the sites all have such different manners of data collection. So some sites only have lab-based reporting, and some places only have provider-based reporting. So we're getting kind of different levels of completeness by site. So that's an issue in itself. And I think that it's definitely a problem, given that we don't have complete data on all of the cases, and there's so much variability in how the data are collected. And then when we get to the interviews, as you know, the response rates probably vary a good deal by patient type and where people are diagnosed. So I think that's definitely an issue. I think that, especially in Washington State, I know that we have less luck reaching MSM for interviews, and so if fewer of those people are being interviewed, it would change our estimates. But I think that because Sun is such a diverse pool of sites, it's hard to say which direction really the bias would go in.
But your information on treatment, does that come from patient interview or provider interview?
It comes from both, depending on the site, because some sites have it as part of their case report, and in places that don't, they have to actually ask the patients.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for that presentation. Sue Blank, New York City. I just was curious if you had any data that looked at co-treatment of ceftriaxone and azithromycin pre and post the latest set of guidelines, because we find that in working with our providers, even just getting that message across about sort of the nuance in the change in co-treatment recommendations is just as critical as the driving home the importance of using ceftriaxone in the proper dosage.
Right. Thanks for that. I did look at that, and I didn't include it here, but that has also increased from 2010 to 2011. It's kind of hard to see a large increase given the short period of time, but it has changed. And we also looked at the same thing in Washington State for a similar analysis we did there, and we've seen a shift there as well. So I think things are changing. It's probably taking a while for people to change their practices, but I think we're heading in the right direction.
Thanks, Roxanne.
Sure.